I had the pleasure of meeting Doyle for the first time on Thanksgiving morning. It has been recommended to the committee that he might be someone to speak at our event today, and he graciously accepted that request. He's committed to working the 12 steps and working the program toward his own recovery, and I will let him say the rest.
Thank you very much, Carolyn. When I received your phone call, I said, really? Really? My name is Doyle. I'm a compulsive overeater. Love that. And so I'm relatively new to Overeaters Anonymous. It's January 1st, 2019, and we all know what that means for compulsive overeaters. That's the beginning of New Year's resolutions and starting a new program, and I've started a million of them. And I've been successful on a million of them and spent lots and lots and lots of money on all of that. And the problem is I'm a compulsive overeater. And all of those programs, I lost weight, but I didn't understand why it always came back. I think that when it comes to what we do, I kind of like, if I were to ask you, what is one of your favorite books or movies, what comes to your mind right now? Because when I think of my life, I kind of look at it as a movie that's unfolding. And anything that it was, if I'm watching a movie, there's always ups and downs and twists and turns and heroes and villains and inciting events. Then all of a sudden something happens and you think, oh my gosh, where's the story going from here? And I think that's probably how all of this has unfolded for me, as far as all of those things, the heroes and villains. I'm a 1955 model, and I was brought up by parents who were raised during the Great Depression in the Appalachian part of America, West Virginia, if you will. And we were always taught that it's very important that you clean your plate. I was taught, my dad worked very hard, my mom stayed at home, and when he came home at night after he worked very hard, he expected to have a hot meal on the table, and there better be plenty of it, and that we all sat in silence while Dad ate, and we filled our plates, and we very much had to clean our plate. Because the line was always, make sure you clean your plate, because you never know when you're going to get a chance to eat again. This year I turned 64 years old, and I don't believe I've ever missed a meal, but I'm terrified that I might. And so I always clean my plates. And if there's more available, you don't let anything get thrown away. So that's when we talk about the inciting events and the people that make up our movie, the people that make up our story, there are people who are part of the supporting cast. And the people that have come into my life, my parents were the ones, I think, who kind of taught me those first things about eating and how important food is and how that's part of what we do. And we don't talk over food, we eat, because that's what we're doing right now. And make sure you clean your plate. Those people are very important, were very important in my life. Now, as far as inciting events, when I was 19 years old, my dad was killed in an accident. Then later on, in 1991, my brother was diagnosed with a terminal illness. On Christmas Day, 1993, he died of AIDS. And those things all came to be part of emotional eating. If I'm feeling badly, I want to eat. If I'm celebrating, I want to eat. Maybe some of you can relate to that. And so when I think about how that played into my story, back in 2002, my wife and I moved to Colorado. Not long thereafter, my daughter and her husband moved to Colorado as well. I share these stories with you because it's all part of my story as to why I'm standing before you today. In 2010, my daughter of 31 years old became a young widow. Her husband died, leaving her a single mother of a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. Let's eat. That was such a crisis. He was diagnosed with a flu, and 12 hours later, he died. And we were just kind of like staggering. Where in the world are we going now? That was an inciting event that nobody saw coming. And so then we just kind of worked through trying to figure out, taking one step at a time. And about 6 years later, there's a man that came into my daughter's life. His name is Peter. And he started falling in love with my daughter. And I watched him as he enveloped my two grandsons. And he came to me and said, "I'm falling in love with your daughter and your grandsons, and I would love to talk with you about having permission to marry her. But before I marry her, I need to be disclose completely to you that I'm an alcoholic. But I've been sober for 6 years. And I find that God has been doing work in my life, and I think that your daughter is part of what God is doing in my life." He married my daughter. And so it wasn't long thereafter that he came to me and said, "You know, I'm going to this men's retreat." As a matter of fact, it was like November of 2017. "I'm going to this men's retreat, and it's going to be in January, and I'd like for you to go with me." And I said, "Oh, thank you for thinking of me." No, I couldn't be. I am not interested in going to a men's retreat with a bunch of guys I don't know, giving up a precious weekend that I value with a bunch of people I don't know. My wife came to me and says, "You really ought to go. It'll be a nice bonding time between you and Peter." So I went. Well, it was a different type of retreat, and it's called Mark Men for Christ. And I thought, I need to do some research. And somebody said, "If you go, you can watch and be very, very entertained. But if you participate, you will be changed." And then I decided to participate, and sure enough, God showed up, and there was a lot of great things that happened in my life with that. And I thought, I have found, it's the new year. I'm off and running. Let's eat. Because we're celebrating, and I'm eating. And that mystery came around where I could not get my food under control. And Peter came to me and he said, "You know, the same 12 steps that help people get away from alcohol works for any addiction. And so just as there's something called AA, there's something called OA." A light came on and I thought, there's an interesting collection of people that you'll have an opportunity to meet, and they're all kind of thinking and feeling the same way that you are. And so I started researching, Googling, how do you find these OA people? You know who you are. And so I was Googling, and then I saw one. Oh, there's one just a few miles down the road from me, and there's a number that I could call. And I called, and someone by the name of Jen answered. "Hello, I'm Jen." I said, "Jen, I don't know what to even ask." She goes, "I'm a compulsive overeater, and I think we can help you." And I went to my first Overeaters Anonymous meeting. Do you remember walking into that first one? Walking into the first one, and you're sitting around, and they're going around the circle, and it comes to me, and I'm mustering up. My name is Doyle. And I'm a compulsive overeater. And that sounded very weird to me to say that out loud. And while I'm still thinking about how weird that is, everybody in a thunderous tongue says, "Hello, Doyle." And I thought, I found my people. And so I started working the plan as I knew it. I was working my plan. And as I was working my plan, I started losing weight. Oh my gosh, it's working. I'm losing weight. I lost 20 pounds. This is a great program. And I texted Jen, "I've lost 20 pounds. And she texted me back and said, "Doyle, this is not a weight loss program." Oh! She says, "There's something called the 12 steps that's not just an idea. It's a program that works if you'll follow it." And I said, "I need some pixie dust. You have some pixie dust for me? Because that's really what I need." She says, "Nope, don't got none." And then there was this, I kept going to the meetings, met some great people. And then there was this retreat at Estes Park. And so I went to that, and I met more amazing people. And am I okay? I met more amazing people in Estes Park. And there was so much excitement. And people were saying, "You know, there's something called 12 steps. And we went through all 12 steps." And I thought, okay, that's evidently what I'm supposed to do. I didn't see 5 and 4 and 3. I wasn't. my time's up. And so, yes, what was that you called it, a brain fart? So I had the opportunity to find that, and now they said something about a sponsor. I met Adam, and Adam talks, we talk regularly on the phone, and he's assertive, he's affirming, and he gives me confidence. And so here I am. I don't know why you've asked this guy. When it comes, I'm new at this, when it comes to the whole thing of OA, on the developmental stages of life, there's newborns, infants, toddlers, preschoolers, child and adolescents, all that. I'm somewhere between infancy and a toddler. And so I'm not sure why you invited this babbling, drooling young guy that doesn't know what he's doing. But I'm learning, and I'm loving it, and I'm growing, and I'm grateful. Thank you.
See the time.
Waiting for the five.
Perfect. Sorry. All right. Thank you, Doyle. Next up to share her experience with step one is Marissa T. I've been in meetings with Marissa over the past couple of years. Witness her transformation to recovery and her commitment to working in 12 steps.
And it's recording.
So. Thank you.
Yeah. There you
go. And Marissa?
I will be right there with the time.
Okay. Thanks, Carol.
Hello, everyone. I'm Marissa. I'm a compulsive overeater. Gratefully recovered just for today. Happy New Year, everyone. So I've been asked to share my experience, strength, and hope as it relates to step one, which says, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. You know, unless we humble ourselves by taking this step, we don't need the rest of the program. The steps are in order for a reason. So I'm going to share a little bit about my experiences with powerlessness and unmanageability and my story. So I grew up in a Jewish family, and food was a big part of what we did, culture and tradition and food. And it was there all the time and a lot of it. And it was kind of pushed on you, especially if you have a Jewish mother. My parents, they also use reward and punishment as food. So I think a good parent will like cater the punishment towards the child, take away what they love the most, right? So my dad coined the phrase popsicle days, which were days where Marissa couldn't have sweets for the day. And interestingly enough, none of my three siblings ever got punished with popsicle days. In middle school and high school, my eating got progressively worse. I remember stopping at Brugger's Bagels every day after school and getting a bagel and a sweet and eating that in between lunch and dinner. And in college, I had the all-you-can-eat meal plan and went crazy on that, several servings every time I had a meal, and had free rein of just buying whatever food I wanted and putting it in my fridge, and nobody could watch me eating, so I could go crazy. Things were pretty out of control. My first job was assistant teacher in a toddler classroom, and I remember just shoveling down, like, saltines, goldfish, and crackers while the kids ate, trying to hide them from the kids because, you know, the kids can only have one serving. And also my co-teachers were, you know, watching me do that too. So embarrassment prevailed. I ate all day long every day, and I thought it was normal. I just thought it was what people did. Fast forward to January 2012, I found recovery in another 12-step program. And I had this awareness with a clear head that I was starting to use sugar to get high. I essentially was like trading one addiction for another. And I started binging. I was out of control. I'd never binged in my life. I always loved food, but the binging just, it was bad. It was really, really bad. but I was working steps in my other program with my sponsor, and I understood the miracles that can happen in these rooms. And in April of 2015, I walked into my first OA meeting, and I jumped in. I reached out to people. I got a volunteer service position and just started going to meetings. And within a year, I was able to lose 50 pounds, but I was not working with an OA sponsor. This is because my sponsor in my other program said, you know, you're in the middle of the step work in this program, and it seems a little crazy to try to work two sets of steps in two programs simultaneously. And I actually did agree with her. But she said, it's okay to go to OA. Go to the meetings, do everything, just don't work steps. And, you know, thank goodness for friends and fellowship in the program. Because a good friend of mine, who happens to be here today, suggested I get a food sponsor. And I'd never heard of anyone having a food sponsor before. But I figured since I was struggling so badly with my food, and I wasn't allowed to get, like, a full sponsor, that I could try that. And I asked this amazing man to be my food sponsor. And he had never done it before, so it was kind of a new experience for both of us. And we started working together just around the food. And it was really tough. It took 8 months of relapsing, picking up coins, starting over, adding a food to my list of alcoholic foods over and over and over again to figure out my abstinence. The first time around, I had figured out my abstinence on my own will. And my self-will had come in, and then the sugar crept back in, and things were pretty bad. So I finally had figured out my abstinence, and this was around the end of last year, and my self-will was just out of control. And I knew what my alcoholic foods were. I just couldn't get it. Like, something wasn't clicking. And I was, like, so frustrated. And I knew I needed to work the OA steps, but I was not done with my steps in my other program. So my hands were kind of tied. And last winter, I hit rock bottom again with my food. And then I started my first 10th step on December 31st, 2017. And something really, really powerful happened. My connection with my higher power just boom. Strengthened. Something just clicked with that 10th step. And, you know, okay, I have a quote from the doctor's opinion here. So, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol or food. The only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules. And those rules are the 12 steps. And in that 10th step, I realized that maintaining abstinence is contingent upon being spiritually fit. And that was what clicked for me. So on this very day last year was day one of my abstinence. And I'm so grateful to say that I have a year today. Thank you, God. So in June 2018, so June of this year, I finally finished my steps in my other program. And I was excited to maintain my relationship with my sponsor in my other program, but get working with my food sponsor into the step work full on. And experience that magic that only sitting with another compulsive overeater provides. And I had been waiting for that moment for a long time. Because I knew that was my plan. And it is magical. It really is. So things were going pretty well. And then in September of this year, I broke my ankle. And I remember thinking, oh, God. The last three injuries I've had in recovery, I've just overeaten. I've been in self-pity. I was not mobile. It was rough. And I remember calling my sponsor and saying, I'm so worried that I'm going to overeat. And he said, no, you're not. You have a food plan. You're good. And was like, but I want to work out so I can eat more. And he was like, that's exercise bulimia. And like, whew, another aha moment. Like I realized sometimes I work out just so I can eat more. So I've been able to get that under control over the last several months. But that injury caused me to surrender on a deeper level. And actually, amazingly, I got back down to the weight, my low weight that I started OA with, and lost a few pounds and have been able to maintain that weight since that injury. So it was just strange that I was losing weight during an injury. I think that's indicative of the surrender that took place. You know, step one is all about surrender. The experience of powerlessness makes us ready to do whatever it takes to free us from the bondage of our own affliction. So regardless of where you're at in your program, may you continue your surrender process over and over and over again, just like I have. Thanks.
Thank you, Marissa.
Next up is Marcia V.
Marcia has been part of my own program since my very first meeting. I did not pick her for this, it was a committee. She has been in OA for more years than I am at liberty to tell. While Marcia has been around for longer than some, maybe most of us, her humble approach to working the steps in her daily life and her rigorous honesty is an example that has helped me regularly. She is someone with whom I feel very blessed to trudge the road of happy destiny. Marcia.
Thank you. Well, I'm really glad to be here, and I'm so glad all of you are here. This is one of my favorite events of the year. I love that I wake up sober and abstinent, which for many years I didn't. And so to be here and have a clear head and rested is great. So I am going to read this just because otherwise I go down little tangents. And so this will help me stay on track. I'm Marcia, a compulsive emotional eater. I grew up on a farm in eastern Nebraska with my older brother, older sister, mom, and dad. My family was caring and loving, but very dysfunctional as well. When I was 13 years old, my mother was diagnosed with bipolar, and there were limited resources to help our family deal with this. My response to this chaotic time was to seek comfort and to numb the painful feelings with food. When I went to college, I added alcohol, nicotine, and caffeine to numb my feelings. This worked until it didn't work. I first gave up nicotine, then alcohol, and then the eating was more out of control. And I finally came to OA knowing that I was totally powerless over food, life, my emotions, other people, places, and things. So our focus today is on the first step. It seemed to take me a long time to accept my powerlessness, even after coming to OA. And there are still those moments that I think I can control food or other things in life. So for me, I need to be constantly reminded of my powerlessness. The beautiful thing about OA for me is that the hope and the healing that I have found here, knowing that there is a solution to my powerlessness. One of the main focuses for me in OA has been in finding my voice, which is stronger each day. Ironically, this Christmas, I had laryngitis for several days. I love God's sense of humor and timing. It certainly helped me to be more mindful of what I said, as the more I talked, the less voice I had. It reminded me that just because I think something doesn't necessarily that mean that I need to say it or that it would be helpful to say. And that's so true. And so many things I could have said that I didn't, I'm really grateful for. So much of what I deal with is more centered around my thinking and my emotions, which I am so powerless over. I am especially vulnerable to my thinking and emotions spiraling out of control when I am too hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. Again, these are the times I need the steps, the tools, God, my sponsor, or another fellow in the program. The things that help me in the most in program are daily contact with my sponsor by phone, text, or email, connecting with sponsees the same way, and daily reading from Today, Voices of Recovery, or other program literature. Part of my daily practice is getting on my knees in the morning to thank God for the night's rest and asking God to help me stay consciously connected to God all day long and to help me discern God's will. Writing a gratitude list, a written prayer asking God's help throughout the day. When I face a bump in the road or negative thinking starts, I try to remember to pray, and that also writing or a phone call can be so helpful. Do I always do this? No, but I am learning to do it more often, and practice certainly makes a difference. When I am in town, I go to 2 to 3 face-to-face meetings a week. When I am traveling, I try to listen to phone meetings often. I'm going to be out of town for some extended times this coming year, and so I'm really trying to plan ahead and look at how I'm going to do my program. And I hope to find some face-to-face meetings that I can go to on a regular basis. And we'll continue to do that morning routine of writing and reading. I love face-to-face meetings as they are such a great reminder about who I am and what the solution is. It also helps me to tell on myself and to share with my sponsor or another person in program if I am not following my food plan or if I am emotionally stuck about some issue or concern. And I recently needed to do that. On Christmas Eve, I had some things with sugar, which is really a no-no for me because it doesn't work. And so it really helped to just say that to someone and the next day get it back on track, and I'm grateful to be back on track. But, you know, that powerlessness, it's there. It's part of the disease. I am currently reading a book in which the author talks about having ADD. Her definition of ADD is authenticity deficit disorder. The author talks about spiritual maturity is the territory beyond being special and being right. It's also the territory beyond being special. Oh, and being right. I said that twice. It's also the territory beyond thinking people are inherently better than you. Both are afflictions, symptoms on either side of the authenticity deficit disorder spectrum. Or, in program words, this is humility. Another part of my routine is exercise. I typically get 1 to 2.5 hours of movement every day. This is so important to my physical and emotional well-being. I am predisposed to depression, and the movement is so helpful to maintaining a more even and stable mood. Also incredibly important to my emotional well-being is my food plan and bottom line, no sugar. I am also a person that loves routine. It just helps me on all levels, spiritual, emotional, and physical. It's one of the things that makes traveling difficult. So I try to establish some type of routine when I'm away from home, as it again, it helps me on all three levels. One of the many gifts of program that I now recognize that is most situations I do have choices, and so actively taking action and making the best choice is so helpful. Again, prayer can be so important and such a good tool when I'm having difficulty figuring out what choices I do and don't have. Left on my own, I am powerless over food and life. The things that are most helpful to me are having a sponsor that I can contact almost daily, writing, reading program literature, having a food plan, seeking outside help when necessary, such as a nutritionist or a therapist, service at the group and intergroup level, 12-step within committee, health fair, helping plan workshops, state conventions, and Region 3 assemblies. Most important is that I keep coming back no matter what. Thank you.